You're listening to Side Hustle Pro, the podcast that teaches you to build and grow a side hustle from passion project to profitable business. And I'm your host, Nikayla Matthews. So let's get started. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. Today's guest is Kelechi Anyadiegu. Kelechi is the founder of Zuva, an online community and marketplace for African-inspired fashion. Zuva helps emerging African fashion brands increase revenue, scale operation, and streamline their process with ease, their easy-to-use online platform for social selling and personal shopping. The mission of Zuva is to give African fashion labels the tools they need to transform their brands and bring authentic African-inspired fashion to the mainstream. And in 2016, Kelechi was named on the Forbes 30 Under 30 list for retail and e-commerce. On this episode, you'll learn how she got the idea and started Zuva with $500, and now in 2016 is expected to earn $2 million in sales. So welcome to the show, Kelechi. Let's get right into it.
Awesome. Thank you.
It's so great to have you. I, you know, in the pre-chat talked about how I've been meaning to reach out to you since I saw you at the Blavity Empower Her conference. So glad we're finally getting to chat.
Cool. Yeah, let's do it.
Great. So let's talk a little bit about your upbringing, because I know that had to influence the entrepreneur you are today. So, you know, what was your childhood like, and what do you think influenced your entrepreneurial drive?
I grew up in Jersey. Both my parents are Nigerian immigrants, so they came here in the 70s, 80s. And so I think that for me, growing up in a Nigerian household, I was always influenced by my culture, who I was, my history, my ancestors. And so I think that just being a part of all of that, being so close to aunties and uncles that my parents had grown up with, and, you know, growing up with quote unquote cousins and friends who were also from the same cultural background as me, heavily influenced just, you know, my pride in my Nigerian culture. And so I think that, you know, that and then, you know, just watching my parents, my dad moved back to Nigeria in the early 2000s to start his business.
Oh, wow.
So he, you know, spent over 20 years here in America, and one day just decided that, you know, he wanted to do something that would make more impact on his communities. And so he, you know, went back to Nigeria and started a business. And so I think that there's watching him, and then my mom, who's a professor at a university. She's a professor currently at Michigan State University, and just watching her and, you know, just always listening to how brilliant she was and the way she talked about African economies and African politics and the books that she wrote, and seeing her run African studies centers. You know, I think just, you know, I took on the perfect blend of both of them, of just really just watching and just being inspired by the work that both of them do. And then I think for me, just always being, you know, really interested in technology, being into web design, user experience design. I went to a bunch of, when I was a kid, I went to a bunch of like these summer camps that had to do with like newspaper layout and stuff like that. Like I've always just been interested in just the ways that people kind of visualize media. And so I think going into college, I studied media arts and technology, which is a pretty broad major, but I learned about web design, Photoshop, and just kind of like the really front end creative side of things. And so, you know, I took that into grad school. I studied user experience design. And then, you know, just one day I decided to use those skills in kind of front end design and marketing, social media, and combined it with my love of fashion. I've always been a mini fashionista after my mama, because she's definitely a diva. And I've always been called a fashionista by friends and strangers and coworkers and everybody. So I found an opportunity to be able to mix kind of my love for fashion with my love for Africa, and do it in a way that would, you know, support designers globally and give them an opportunity to, you know, really create impact for themselves and for people around them.
That's awesome. And before we get into more about your startup process, can you tell us more about how Zuva works for those who haven't used the site?
Yeah, I mean, Zuva is a multi-vendor marketplace. So it operates like an Etsy or an Amazon or an eBay. Designers, they go on the site and they create independent storefronts and they upload images of their designs. And then consumers can go and shop these designs and they place an order, get to them maybe 2 to 3 weeks later. We use social media and social selling to heavily market and to tell those stories globally.
So walk us through the creation now. I've read, you know, you talked about being a fashionista, and I've read that the idea started with just, you know, getting tons of compliments on your clothes. And after a while, it just kind of clicked for you.
Yeah. I mean, I think that growing up, I've always loved, you know, representing my cultural pride by wearing African-inspired pieces. I remember when I graduated from college, I had a piece that was made for my graduation. I would wear pieces to class, to work, to the mall, wherever. And people always ask me about it, like, you know, where do you get that? I've never seen anything like that before. I never really realized how spoiled I was. You know, I would have aunties who would bring for me from Nigeria. But, you know, it clicked on me, like, just how inaccessible these pieces were to people in Western markets. Not everyone has aunties in Africa who can bring them these pieces. And, you know, there's not a lot of places, physical or online, where you can go to purchase these pieces and be confident in what you're getting. So I want to create a solution where people could feel confident in their purchases and also just get to know, you know, the designer that they're purchasing from.
So what were some of the first steps you took to take Zuva from idea to brand?
The very first thing I did was start the social media. I started Instagram and Facebook. I think Instagram caught on much more quickly. I just went at it. I just kind of started using pictures and hashtags and was refining and learning and looking at comments and looking at likes and just, you know, continuing to find ways to really gauge engagement and, you know, really looking to how to continue to gauge what people really wanted. And so, I was just kind of heavily on social media, posting 6 to 10 times every single day and just continually getting that feedback. And so that was like the first like 6 months.
Okay.
I kind of grew the social media, Instagram especially.
What were you posting? Were you posting the designs of vendors or designers you knew were going to be on Zuva, or just in general, like street fashion, street wear?
Yeah, I was just posting random street fashion, things that I would find on the internet, on using hashtags. I posted that mainly like for the first two, 3 months. And then by the 3 month mark, you know, the social media was growing so quickly, I was able to start recruiting vendors. And so I was able to start promoting their stuff. I was able to start saying, you know, oh, so-and-so is coming to Zuva soon. So I was focusing more on the vendors who were actually selling through the marketplace. And then by the 6 months, I had a solid 20, 30 vendors. So I started focusing more on their pieces with the inspirational pieces every once in a while. And so that's kind of how that started. And I think that from the day that we started, we just kind of grew organically.
I'm so intrigued by your business model. One, because, you know, there are a lot of people who social media seems absolutely foreign to them, or they're actually trying, like they're starting an e-commerce brand. And nowadays it's so saturated, they can't get the brand awareness that they're looking for. So can you, if you were to break it down a little bit more, like how did you know which hashtags you wanted to use? Were you tagging people? Like, you know, you were just a space on Instagram, a corner of Instagram, but you were drawing people to you. How?
I think that it has more to do with my background than anything. I think that having that eye for aesthetics and design and fashion, and just coupling it with technology, you know, I was able to have a really good eye for what people liked. So I think that, you know, at the end of the day, it really just comes down to the content. I know the hashtags were an important part of it, but I know like the algorithm then is kind of different than it is now. I actually think it's much stronger now. And actually more heavily use hashtags now than I did when I first started. But I think that I was just kind of relying on word of mouth. So, you know, rather than relying on hashtags, I was relying on, you know, seeing people tag their friends. So if I posted a picture and someone tagged a lot of friends, then I would know that's a highly engaged post because they're telling people that about it, right? And that's kind of more what I wanted to see, you know, was people like telling their friends, you know, about the page. So I just focused more on ways to get people opening up, get people talking to us. You know, I don't do it so much anymore, but we used to have like, what was it called? Like Friday night sister chats or something like that. Mm-hmm. We would post up, how do you feel about whatever? And so people would respond. And actually now I think I'm going to start doing that again because that was really fun, but just ways to engage, right? And so I think that for me, likes are great, but I think that for me, the most important thing is always engagement and how you're making people feel.
Absolutely. And now let's talk a little bit more about getting the designers on board. So it's run similar to Etsy, and you are not in charge of the fulfillment. You know, it's up to the designer. Is that correct?
Yes. Although we do have services where we do provide fulfillment if they need that. But for the most part, they do it themselves.
Got it. So how did you vet them and figure out who you trusted to be on your platform and represent Zuva? And then how do you ensure that their customer experience is a good one?
I mean, when I first started, I actually just used Etsy. And I would just look at like their feedback on Etsy and what people were saying about them. I looked on their social media channels and I looked at what people were saying about them there. I looked at their websites. I looked at, you know, kind of how they presented themselves. Because I think that, you know, when we first started, it was a real chicken and egg problem. And so, you know, although the marketplace was created to help designers with a lot of things I just said, like, you know, helping them build their brand and helping them to have a digital platform. I think that, you know, for the very first designers I wanted to work with, I wanted to make sure that, you know, they were kind of good on their own. And just kind of use them as a way to kind of start in the marketplace. So yeah, I kind of just recruited designers who I thought had really nice things. I personally thought had nice things. And designers who, you know, when I posted their stuff on Instagram, people would be highly engaged.
Oh, interesting. I never thought of that they actually were already selling in, you know, in the international marketplace. They weren't just based in, you know, Nigeria or another African country. I thought you like went and sourced, designers who had not yet figured out how to leverage online platforms to sell. So then how did you figure out the financial structure, like the percentage of sales to take? Like, what did you base that on?
I started off low. I think in the beginning was just kind of proving the theory and kind of showing people what Zuva could be, because I was pretty confident that, you know, we were growing and we would continue growing. So I just started off taking a very small percentage just as a way to kind of attract them to the marketplace. And then, after like the first year of doing that, you know, I was able to create the use case where I was able to, you know, double that. And, you know, they were okay with it because, you know, they, you know, were still making revenues through the platform. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that for a lot of them, there was very little risk for being the marketplace. All they had to do was upload their pictures, and if people bought something, they sent it. If not, there's nothing to hurt them. So I think that from the beginning, I just tried to really de-risk it for them. but still make it worth their while.
Ah, and then for those that were not able to handle distribution and fulfillment themselves, how did you determine how you're going to do that for them? And how do you do that for them?
So we're actually launching a service in the new year, a fulfillment service. So where designers send us their pieces and we fulfill for them. So we have an office here in Atlanta and a little fulfillment center. And so every time an order comes in for one of their pieces, we fulfill it for them.
Oh, interesting. And so how did you figure out the best shipping model for international shipping and which vendors to use, like DHL versus, you know, another vendor?
I mean, we just based it on designers or based on shipping solutions that gave us the best deals and who we felt like, you know, really was looking to, you know, create a good relationship with us. So, yeah, for us, it was a no-brainer. We just kind of went with naturally, you know, what made the most business sense.
Got it. And I have a lot of people, and we have a Side Hustle Pro Facebook community now, and people have reached out to me separately. They want to learn more about different e-commerce ideas that they have. And I would be interested to know, you know, your business, it's no easy feat, but you've learned a ton, I'm sure. What are the best practices for international e-commerce that you could offer to our listeners?
I would say the most important thing is to know your audience. I think that, you know, people think they can just market to everyone, but it's important to think about the mindsets of different consumer segments. So I think that, you know, for where we are right now, we're focusing on a very targeted consumer segment, but there are so many more that we hope to target in the new year, and we hope that will contribute to growth. So yeah, I think that it's just very, very important to realize that people have different attitudes, different thoughts. They think about things in just ways that you might not even expect. So it's just important to elicit that feedback from them.
Amen. And speaking of knowing your audience, knowing your target, when it came to things like Facebook advertising, were you targeting simply based on lifestyle interests or, you know, ethnic and demographic information or all of the above?
I mean, for our initial consumer market, it was really based more on just interests, what they like to read, who they looked up to, what they were talking about. And I think that that gave us a really good start because it was a very strong market. But I think that, yeah, we're at a place now where we're exploring new segments and new markets and new ways to grow, but doing it in a way that, you know, still is engaging our current market. So it's a fine line that we're kind of playing because we want to make sure that we're not forgetting about the current market that we're serving, but also that, you know, we're putting the pieces in place to be able to grow and scale.
Such a definitely a fine line to, like, you know, branch out but yet still serve that core audience. I'm glad you mentioned that. And let's switch gears a little bit to talk about you, Kalechi. Before you became the founder of Zuva, your background is in digital media marketing and online community management, right? And so you touched on social media, but you kind of had, you know, a head start, like you were working in this industry. So tell us about that background and how you started Zuva. Was it a side hustle at this point, or were you a full-time student?
Yeah, when I started Zuva, I was a student. And so it was kind of, I guess, more of a side hustle. I was in grad school during the time in Pittsburgh. But I didn't really like grad school, so I left. I think that throughout grad school, I didn't really feel like I wanted to be there. So I was kind of always had like side hustles. And so I was working in social media marketing and digital media. And that kind of gave me a lot of the experience that I needed to kind of have the skills I needed to start Zuva. So that was 2013, I think it was when I initially had the idea. 2014, I had left Pittsburgh, moved to Jersey, because I wanted to be closer to the city, and I thought that would be better for the business. And luckily, I had family there, so it was easy going in and out of the city and doing what I needed to do. And then I lived in Jersey for 2 years. And I lived at home for 2 years. And I kind of used these 2 years kind of wearing many different hats, kind of doing a little bit of everything.
Were you working or still in grad school at that point, or just completely?
I was transferred to a different grad school.
Okay.
And so because I had like 1 semester left, and my parents really wanted me to finish, so I was like, and like there was Rutgers was like down the street from me, so I said, let me just go in once a week, take like one class a semester, and just finish this. So technically I was in school, but I was like, more of my time was focused on Zuva, so it was like 80% Zuva, 20% school. And so I finished grad school earlier this year. And then I moved to Atlanta, and I think that moving to Atlanta really was a milestone for me because I wasn't wearing so many hats anymore. I was finally building out my team. I was delegating more, and I was running a real company.
So why Atlanta?
Atlanta is our biggest consumer market,
Oh,
so most
interesting.
of our customers come from here. So it just made sense. And it's cheap.
Definitely cheaper than New York, New Jersey. So something you said stuck out to me. So you're working, you're finishing up grad school for the parents, good old parents. And then it seems like you just made the full-time entrepreneurship leap. Like, did you ever think about getting a full-time job to hold you down while you started Zuva? Or by then, were you starting to make income?
No, I never wanted a full-time job. I was pretty adamant about that. I just always knew that 9 to 5 wasn't for me. I've never had a full-time job. I've had internships and stuff, but I'm just not a 9 to 5 type of girl. Do that. I want to make my own hours and kind of do my own thing, and so I made it happen. So for 2 years, I just kind of hustled and did what I had to do to put food on the table. And it was fine because I knew that
Kalichi, that sounds very cryptic. You gotta clarify.
there's not much to clarify. I mean, I didn't have much bills. I lived at home, car. I mean, I was in school, so I had student loans to eat. So I just was very lean with my personal budget and my the budget for my company. So I made it work. That's all.
Great. Yeah, I think that's something we all need to have emphasized. Like, it's not about making more sometimes. It's really just about managing what you have, like, and making it work. So you moved to Atlanta. Now, what were some of the first steps you took to start pushing Zuva to that next level, like putting it into full gear once you got to Atlanta?
I think just, really empowering my team to do the right things has been really important to us. And so, with that, I was just really delegating more, and just being able to kind of remove myself a bit and think about the big picture of Zuva and how we can really grow. So it's just been exciting just, figuring out strategies to really take Zuva to the next level.
Okay, so you mentioned a team, and we didn't really get into that yet, but when did you start hiring a team? Were they working just for for free at first, or were you able to hire once you were making profit?
Yeah, I was able to hire from when I hired like my first employee. I was able to pay them. I think that I don't really believe in I won't say not having them work for free, but it's just tough for me. I know that, you know, people got to eat, people have lives, and it's very difficult to almost demand people to work at the standards that I need them to work at if they're not being paid. So yeah, I was able to pay them, you know, through our profits and manage it. And yeah, I think that by empowering them, I've been able to continue making those profits so that, you know, we can continue growing.
Speaking of profit, now, you know, you've been in articles I've read in the Forbes 30 Under 30 that you started with 500, but now you're projecting 2 million in sales. Now, that's no chump change. First of all, how do you wrap your mind around that you are at the helm of a $2 million company? And then what kind of team have you hired to really manage the financial structure?
It's a blessing. I think that, you know, when I first started Zuva and I started creating the platform and all of those things, you know, I didn't really know what it could be. I was just more excited to kind of see what growth would look like. And I think that growth over the years has just been really incredible. So yeah, I think that it's a blessing to have those kind of numbers and, you know, hopefully to be able to continue growing through the years. I think that with a team, it's just the most important thing for me is to have people who are passionate and excited and really believe in the vision. And so I try to keep people around me who, you know, want to build and are excited. And so, and that's always the most important thing for me. So those are the kinds of people that I'm trying to really, you know, have around me, is people who are inspired, people who get it, who want to see growth, and people who are just ready to, you know, take over the world with African fashion.
Yes. Going back to the sales for a second. So how long did it take before you started to reap that profit? And then what were the first things you invested back into your business?
It took about a year. And I mean, I think that where I saw the most efficient way to invest was into marketing. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, luckily, knowing who our audience was, I was able to invest it into the right types of marketing, and, you know, targeting the right types of people. So, so yeah, I was kind of able to take what I learned, and on Instagram and, you know, through, you know, people who followed us on Instagram and, you know, just continue to hyper target people within that consumer segment.
Do you focus on email marketing as well? And how do you think about your sales funnel?
Yeah, no, email marketing is also really, really important for us. I think we're doing a couple different things. But yeah, I mean, email marketing is great. You know, having someone dedicated to do that is really, really important, and making sure that we're designing it in a way that's, you know, just highly engaged and gets people excited. I think that, yeah, social media is really been really important as well for us. Our events have been really important for us. And just, you know, word of mouth and trying to have the best customer service that we can possibly have.
One last thing on the topic of customer service. What have you learned about hiring throughout this process? I know you want to hire people who are really passionate, but, you know, are there any other tips that you can help new entrepreneurs who are trying to move their business forward and at the same time find the right team?
I would say just be cautious of people who aren't really ready to work. I think, I mean, I get approached by people all the time who, you know, want to be part of Zuva and do this for Zuva and do that, but they don't really understand the work that's involved. So I would say, you know, really find someone who matches your hustle and matches your spirit, and, you know, someone who's ready to get down to the nitty gritty, and someone who's just not, you know, into like the flashy kind of sides of having a startup, but are really ready and excited to work.
Oh, yes. I think I'm glad you mentioned that, because would you say that it is a red flag when someone is just more excited about like your business and the press it's getting? And so obviously you want someone who's excited, but you know, how can you differentiate when they're excited and ready to get down, or when they're just wanting to be a part of the it thing?
I think it's about people who provide recommendations and solutions without even asking, but provide it, you know, in a way that makes sense, right? Because I feel like you know more about your business than anybody else, right? So if someone says, oh, well, you could be optimizing conversions by doing A, B, and C, and you're like, yeah, I could be. That makes so much sense, right? Like, I mean, these are just talking points, right? I think that execution is a whole nother story, right? So I think that on one side, you want to have someone who's coming to you saying, you know, okay, I see deficiencies, and, you know, based on my background or my skills or my whatever, this is how I feel like we should approach it. Then you know that person is right.
Because that person's serious.
Yeah.
That's an awesome tip. I, you know, it's like you're essentially saying, make sure they're bringing something to the table. me and my fiance have this joke about that. One of his friends always talks about, well, you know, what's such and such bringing to the table? But it's so true. It's like, that's a telltale sign of if that will be a valuable relationship, whether you're hiring someone or what have you. So why don't we, go ahead and jump into the lightning round. You know the deal here. You just answer the first thing that comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
All righty. So number one, what's an online resource that has helped you in your business and that you can share with the Side Hustle Pro audience?
DigitalUndivided.com.
Tell us more.
Digital Undivided is just a great resource for women of color entrepreneurs, great staff who are just really excited to help female founders flourish.
Number two, what's been your proudest moment since launching Zuva?
I think that it's been the vendors who come back and tell me, you know, oh, I've been able to, you know, hire so-and-so in my community to, you know, do whatever, whether it be an assistant or, you know, or construct the garments. But yeah, I think that just hearing those stories from vendors has been amazing.
Number three, what's the best book or podcast episode that you've consumed this year?
Currently I'm reading How to Be Smarter Than Your Lawyer. And that's been a really good book.
Ooh, that sounds really good. Is that just like legal tips for entrepreneurs?
Yeah, it's about legal tips and venture financing, raising money and stuff.
Okay, cool. I will link to that in the show notes, guys. All right. Number four, what is a daily practice you use to start your day on the right note and increase your productivity throughout the day?
I meditate every morning when I get out of bed. I kind of just meditate and then just think about how blessed I am and where I am and waking up and just being happy that, you know, I'm alive, friends and family are all well, I have food, and, you know, things might be stressful going to the office, but at the end of the day, you know, things are good. So just reminding myself of that every single morning.
Oh, cool. And do you use a app to meditate or self-guided? Any resources that you can share with us?
Yeah, no, it's more self-guided. It's more self-guided.
Okay. And then finally, number five, what's your parting advice for fellow woman entrepreneurs who want to be like you but are worried about losing a steady paycheck?
I would say you have to be confident. You have to trust in your vision. I mean, there's nothing wrong with working and like kind of doing your company as a side. I think that the problem with that is that, you know, you probably won't get any sleep. And I just think that mental and physical health is just very important for entrepreneurs. And it's something that people don't think about. And I think that, you know, that was definitely a turning point for me in really building my team, was just working way too much, trying to do everything. I think there's a good article I would recommend. It's by Lovie Ajayi, and it was what was it called? It's like Ending an Empire of One.
Oh, I saw that. I definitely saw that. Oh, yeah. I'll link to that. Yeah, for sure.
I think that's a great article. I think that article just kind of made me, it just made me realize that I was doing way, way, way too much. And it wasn't manageable, it wasn't scalable, it wasn't smart, it just didn't make sense. So I had to figure out a way to really build a team and empower a team, right? Because I think that, you know, even when people have teams, sometimes they tend to like be like, oh, well, someone did something wrong, I'll just do it myself. And it's like you have to like be able to let go of things. And I think that, you know, for a lot of people who are perfectionists, that can be really difficult, but you're doing yourself a disservice when you try to make everything so perfect. So yeah, I would say that, you know, really try to have that team, take care of yourself. You know, it's really important. You can't help anyone. You can't build a company. You can't do nothing if you're sick and, you know, and different things. So, you know, take care of yourself. And, you know, make sure that you're continuing to foster a relationship with your friends and your family. And yeah, they're not feeling like they're left out.
Thank you. I feel like that is something that we don't talk about enough. Like when you are grinding and you're neglecting yourself, your family, your relationships, and you look up one day and you're unhappy. I'll definitely link to that article because you're right, it was a good one. So before we end, I would love to know what's next for Zuva.
We have a whole bunch of new things in the new year that we're getting ready to launch. And yeah, just follow us on social media and you'll see what they are.
Awesome. And the perfect segue because I want to know what's the best way that we can connect with you and follow you after this episode.
Just email kolechi@zuva.com.
And then social media everywhere. Is it at Shop Zuva or at Zuva on some
Shop
channels?
Zuva.
At Shop Zuva. Okay. I will link to that as well. So, all right, guys. Well, thank you so much for joining us in the guest chair today, Kolechi. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
All righty, and there you have it. Hey guys, thanks for listening to Side Hustle Pro. If you want to hear more from me, head on over to sidehustlepro.co/sidehustlecorner to get my weekly Side Hustle Diaries chronicles about my own journey from passion project to profitable business. And if you want to find me online, I'm at Side Hustle Pro on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Don't forget to join the Side Hustle Pro Facebook community. Go to sidehustlepro.co/mastermind. And as always, if you love the show, do me a favor and subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. Thanks, guys. Talk to you next week.